World Wide Web is under attack. They're taking it away.
Welcome to the tech segment of We're Drunk and We Know Things. We are in JB's smokehouse drinking rustling substance. Our producer this week is Johnny Come Lately. And this week, month, we are, for our sins, discussing WWW. The web.
That's what I do. I drink, and I know things.
It's the World Wide Web.
It is the World Wide Web.
Invented by?
Spider-Man.
Yes, he is a web designer. And with that, we've got all of the bad internet jokes out of the way.
No, we don't. Strap yourself in for the next 4 hours of 20 minutes of information and...
So I think there's a key jumping off point. Mm-hmm. We need to try and not get sued.
Okay.
Because the web, of course, was invented by Tim Berners-Lee.
Yes.
Who traditionally on this podcast has received something of a rough ride.
Well, he's famous for liking a rough ride.
He does like it rough. You see, that's the kind of thing we need to be careful about, right? So Sir Tim Berners-Lee...
Yes.
Is going to be given a fair and honest hearing.
It's true.
Oh,
literally everything I can do to not already be making... Listen, he's a great man. We've all got our peccadilloes, and we will do our best not to discuss his. We're definitely going
Especially
to.
Especially not ones that we may or may not have made up. So...
That is the point. We've made so much stuff up about this bloke at this point in the last nearly 2 years of doing this podcast that now anything you say, people are going to be like, basically, if it's a fact about Tim Berners-Lee that isn't to do with him being a perv, it's probably true.
Yeah.
That's a good rule of thumb for this one.
Fact. Air quotes. Right. Let's get started. Because it turns out the World Wide Web is big.
It is big.
I mean, broad. I mean, wide.
But
I
it's not actually a physical thing, so it's not big at all, though, is it?
No.
Is it a thing?
Well, it kind of is a thing, I guess.
Is there a server at Cisco System somewhere that's got the whole web on it?
There are probably several. This is the internet. No, there isn't, and that's a key point.
Right.
That we'll come back to in a sec. So let's run through... we're going to do this a little bit differently.
Oh.
The usual...
En français! No, okay.
Oh, bonjour, madame et monsieur, le blinky blunky...
That was the extent of my French, so that's fine, let's move on.
Avec monsieur Tim Berners-Lee. Le grand dick pic.
I'm trying to think of what dirty bird is. Anyway.
It would be something wazzo.
Yeah, let's move on.
I want to run through some of the key concepts mm-hmm. that define the web first, because we're going to reference these when we talk about the history and where it came from, and so we need to understand them up front, right?
Right.
So one of the major things that TBL actually invented that mm-hmm. makes the web work is the concept of hypertext and the hyperlink.
Right, so I know what a hyperlink is.
Good.
You click on it and it goes somewhere.
Yes. It goes to another page of hypertext, fundamentally.
Yeah.
And if we're defining it semi-sensibly, then hypertext is a system of markup.
Right.
And markup is literally you add information to text.
Sure, okay.
That allows you to format it.
Right.
Add semantic meaning.
Right.
So things like H1, H2, heading 1, heading 2.
Yeah,
the kind of shit that we do in Word, right?
Yeah, sure.
And that's semantic value.
Right.
And, of course, with the hyperlinks, we can also link content together.
Yeah.
Now, hypertext itself is incredibly simple.
Right.
To the point that it was designed so that somebody just using a basic text editor could add... these elements to a document. It doesn't require that you code it per se.
So is it literally like making it in italic, making it bold, making it blue?
And to do that, you wrap the text that you want to be bold in tags or elements.
We just don't see the tags in Word because you just click the button that says I on it and it makes it italic. Yeah. But what it is doing is applying a hypertext tag.
Kind of. I mean, words are a little bit different. But sure, okay. In the early days of HTML, markup is crucial.
Right, okay.
Equally crucial is the concept of the link. I mean, this was the real, like, oh my God moment for the web.
Yeah.
And the idea that a document can link to another document.
Yeah.
That's how you get a web of data, of information.
It's how you end up, like, what they call a wiki wormhole. Yes. I was reading one thing, and now I've got 40 tabs open.
The combination of links and semantic tags is basically, it forms a markup language. Mm-hmm. And the one that we're going to be talking about for the most part today is something called the hypertext markup language, or HTML.
Right. Well, I didn't know. I didn't know that was what HTML stood for.
Now you know. See, that's the first little nugget.
Every day
we're going to be dropping nuggets. Got to get my nugs. Weirdly, HTML, which was actually a TBL invention, wasn't a unique invention.
Right.
It was based on a whole bunch of forerunners.
Okay.
Including Memex, which was it was never actually built. It was a hypothetical proto-hypertext system.
Right.
That was described in 1945 by a chap called Vannevar Bush.
It was in 1945?
Yeah, because he was trying to basically make this hypothetical point about how we can better structure knowledge and information.
Sure.
And the whole point was that you form links between it. Sure. He did this in an article in The Atlantic. It's actually well worth a read. We also had Project Xanadu.
Okay. This is going to take forever if you just make shit up, Rob.
Project Xanadu, and it was the first hypertext project that was founded in 1960 by Ted Nelson.
Yep.
And, of course...
Famously, Olivia Newton-John worked on that. That's where she got the...
That's where she was inspired.
Yeah, that's where she...
It took her 20 years to write the song, but...
It's a good song. It's really long.
I'm pretty sure... How old was Olivia Newton-John in 1960?
Well, when's Grease made? Grease is in 1950s, right?
Set.
I'm kidding.
and IBM had something that they call the IBM Generalized Markup Language, GML, that they developed in 1969. That's component one.
Sure.
Component two is the concept of servers and clients, or as we call them, browsers.
So this is Tim Berners-Lee effort to more accurately and efficiently service his clients.
No.
What?
Servers.
Oh, sorry. That's my bad.
I'm not waitresses. or waiters. So markup is legible, as in you could open an HTML file, and you could probably read it.
Yeah. I've clicked on that button accidentally on Internet Explorer before. Yeah.
View source.
Yeah.
It's not very pretty.
I was expecting peppercorn, so that's why I was disappointed.
Oh, Christ. much better that we have a piece of software, a dedicated client, that can basically take that hypertext and render it into something that means something.
Yeah. So you've got the code thing in the background, and then you've got it paints the page, right? Is that what it's called?
Exactly. Yeah. Your H1 is bigger than your H2 instead of just being H1.
That's true. That's why they call us H1 and H2.
Also, it allows you to click the link rather than having to just read the link and copy and paste the link's target. It draws the whole thing together. The browser is kind of fundamental.
So all of that stuff isn't just for World Wide Web, then. It is also for... Could you put links into Excel to other Excel pages and all that kind of stuff? So it's not so much that,
What started it?
HTML?
Well, Project Xanadu.
Right, Project Xanadu. But it's more of a link to a location as opposed to a...
Yeah.
Because that's what a web page is, right? It's something that's hosted somewhere.
So, yes. Yeah. No. And it's hosted on the second part of this, which is the web server.
Grasping the most fundamental, simple concepts here. Yeah, really good.
The server being the mechanism by which this information is delivered. It's not responsible for rendering it or displaying it in any way. It's just responsible for getting it to you.
Right.
So the web client, there and it sends it. Browser, and the web server are our second and third fundamental concepts, or third and fourth if you're keeping count. And finally, we have URLs.
They stand for Universal Real Links, son. Oh, no, the S is just because it's plural.
And DNS. I think we've talked about DNS before.
Isn't that like denial of...
No, that's DDoS.
Oh, okay.
Websites,
we have talked about DDoS.
Well, you remember when we were talking about TCP/IP, like 3 months ago,
vividly.
Whatever. And we have the concept of an IP address that identifies a computer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the trouble is that websites need to be accessed. IP addresses are really hard to remember.
Sure.
Because they're like phone numbers. I mean, who remembers their own phone number?
It's true.
Well, hopefully everybody. Then again, you never have to phone yourself.
It's true. To quote Phoebe.
So, The concept of a domain name,
right?
This idea that you can have something dot something,
yeah,
which is much more memorable,
and
mapping that onto an IP address is also fundamental to the web.
Sure, of course, yeah.
Now, weirdly, this concept was actually originally developed by the Stanford Research Institute, SRI. Where they maintained a list of, they had loads of servers,
right,
and they maintained a list of host names that mapped to IP addresses in a text file.
Right, okay.
And if you wanted to know which server was the library server,
right,
you would go to this file, look it up, and it would say it's on 123.456.
Right, but it would say library, and then, but instead of typing in the word library, you'd physically look it up on a list.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, I'm with you.
And hilariously, this was maintained by hand by one guy.
Right.
And to get a system added to it, you actually had to phone their network information center. They're like central control center.
It was like like directory inquiries.
Yeah, you had to pick up the phone and say, I have a new server. Would you mind adding it to the host's file?
What would you like it to be called?
And you had to do this, brilliantly, during business hours, because they were closed outside of 9 and 5.
Incredible. Isn't technology grand?
Wonderful. By the mid-80s, the domain name service had become so big that manual wasn't going to work anymore, so they automated
it. His hand was cramping up from constantly having to write them down in his book.
Yeah, I mean, the guy with the index cards was like, there must be a better way, we're a computer laboratory. And yeah, the first domain name system server was written at Berkeley.
Right.
And it was actually called the Berkeley Internet Name Domain Server.
Berkeley Internet Name Domain Server. BINS.
Or BIND.
It's got server on here now.
Yeah, but the S, it's plural. now, what will quietly blow your mind a little bit is that BIND was the first DNS server.
Right.
It's also still the biggest DNS server in the world today.
Oh, really? Is that just by virtue of it being around the longest?
Yeah.
They just
and
keep adding stuff to it.
And being improved and what have you. It's the de facto standard for a DNS server. So DNS will get you to the server.
Right.
To get the page, the actual information, you also then need an additional bit of information to locate it, which is the concept of a URL.
Right.
But we're going to come back to URLs in a minute.
Right.
Before the web. Because there was a time before the World Wide Web was a thing.
Honestly, I've said this before a million times. How?
Well, how did people... time before anything was a thing.
When you watched a film before there was the internet, how did you know every single film or TV show that every actor in that film had been in?
You had a book.
Ugh.
No, there was. There was... what was it called?
There's a Leonard Maltin Guide to Movies, which is... but that's an encyclopedia. I mean, those are great books. With great games to be played with them. Before IMDb. What the hell?
Yeah. Before the web...
not something we're just glorying in. Before the web.
No.
People went outside and like there was the thing with the hoop and the stick.
There was a hoop and a stick, yes.
The catching the ball in the cup.
The ball in the cup. And there was a chap called Tim. A man called Tim who was a contractor at the European Organisation for Nuclear Research.
Right.
Which we know as CERN.
Okay.
CERN.
The people with the black hole machine.
Well, they are now, yes.
Yeah.
And we're around about 1980. Mm-hmm. Two big things happened in 1980.
Right.
One.
Bowie released Low.
Three big things. Tim Berners-Lee was working at CERN.
Right.
And needed to build a system to basically become a database of like systems and people and software.
Right, okay. So he just wanted to make a big-ass list of various things.
Well, that's what he was there to do. He's a contractor.
Right. Sure.
And he needed to make it explorable and relatable and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So he called the system Inquire.
Right.
And used it as a perfect excuse to play about with hypertext, which was a concept that he'd been kicking around for a while.
Sure.
Presumably whilst hitting the bongos.
So he could... you know, look up a system and then see all the users that were attached to it.
That, by the way, is a throwback to something that you'll hear in the bloopers. So...
you have to... This is... I've just suddenly spotted... Johnny Cohn Lately's purpose. To keep us honest.
Nah, we don't need him.
Keeps continuity straight.
He's not even shown up yet. So Inquire was basically pages of information, but the key thing was that to get at more information through the Inquire system, you couldn't query it or access it, or you had to follow a link.
Right.
So the entry page, or mm-hmm. the intro page...
Was essentially a list of links, yeah.
like a table of contents.
Right.
And then you would click the link.
Like you're used to in every PDF or Word document in the world now. You have the list at the front, you click on it, and you skip to the thing.
This is not in AE. We don't have PDF.
Yeah, I'm saying, I'm not downplaying it.
We've got Word.
Why are we talking like this all of a sudden?
I'm not sure we've got Word. Because you're keeping it real, isn't it?
From the streets.
Yeah.
Like TBL. Do you ever heard the story about how we cut that form? Anyway, not that I'm being a perv, so it might be true.
Right, so... Yeah. By 1985,
right.
the global internet had mm-hmm. begun to really proliferate the world.
Right. Okay.
Because don't forget that prior to this, we
talked like
we about
skipped
this
a step here, Rob.
Well, no.
You made a list.
Internet... not the web. You appreciate there is a difference,
yes,
right?
Yes, of course, yes, I do, now that
the
you pointed
being
out,
invented in 1969 by ARPA.
It's true, I remember.
But took its sweet time to proliferate, because right. why would it? And the domain name system, so the guys at Berkeley and the guy with his big list and his Rolodex, had started to come into being. They were a thing.
Yeah.
And in 1988, the first direct internet IP, internet connection...
Yeah.
between Europe and North America
right.
came online.
Wow. Okay.
Prior to 88, the internet didn't... There was no way to connect from Europe to
sure.
North America.
It was transatlantic.
Via,
it was, yeah.
I don't know, satellites or something. And with that, the world is ready for the web.
The world's still not ready for the web, Rob.
I don't think...
Let's be real.
Nobody could have foreseen in the winter of 1988. The chances
and this
of
is presumably because Tim Berners-Lee had a bit on the side in the UK.
Well, he was based in Switzerland. He'd also got a home in France.
Oh, nice.
I think he'd got...
Fair well paid for a contractor.
Yeah.
For data entry.
I mean, there's a bit where I kind of wanted to do a bit of a profile on TBL, but it's tough because...
I'll do a TBL profile if you like.
You're not sure if he's, like, really posh or just a little bit posh. Because he clearly worked.
Or was, like, a worker and who
but
is now
it's
posh.
Like, did he work because it
he's
was
new
like,
money,
oh,
though.
I need something to fill the hours.
He's new money, though, right? Where was he educated?
Private school in London and Oxford.
Posh.
You think?
No, posh.
Yeah. Anyway... Let's talk about...
Did you go to Harrow Boys School?
No.
Nah. I just really... If you'd been like, yeah, I'd been like, yeah, I know, I read a book about him or something, but no, I didn't.
Well, he probably hung around outside the gates of that one along with all the others. This is it. This is the episode that gets us taken off the web.
No.
And therein lies an irony.
We get the cease and desist letter, we put it up on Instagram, we're famous.
Woohoo!
And then we get him on the show to apologise, but actually just... Absolutely rip it out of him. Oh, I've told him my plan.
I would absolutely jump at the chance to interview TBL.
Yeah.
I mean, just because he's...
I would as well, but I wouldn't ask him any questions about that. I'd just be like, what's your favourite Star Wars film?
Yeah. Oh, no, I don't want to
completely.
Talk about that at all.
No, not at
or
all.
Or any of your contributions to engineering
no,
or science.
At all. Oh, you're a tech podcast. Yeah, yeah, we are. But what we want to talk about today is, do you like ping pong? Like
fajitas? For or against?
Yeah.
Show
your
working.
Favourite cut of beef?
He likes rump.
Oh, he likes it. Okay.
1984.
He likes big rump and he cannot, like, no, let's, come on. 1984.
TBL returns to CERN,
right.
but this time as Already a permanent been? Employee.
Oh, right, okay.
He's joined the team.
Right.
And he writes a proposal on March 13th, 1989,
mm-hmm.
for a large hypertext database
right.
with tight links.
So honestly, you're just reading me the history of Skynet, but okay.
He's firstly, demonstrating that, to be honest, at this point, TBL, a bit of a one-trick pony.
You know when the Terminator spills off, like, on this date, this happened, this date, and on this date at this time, Skynet became self-aware. This is what this feels like.
Yeah. We're building up to it.
God, he's Miles Dyson.
He was encouraged to write the software, but the computer that he had to work on, hilariously, was something called a Next computer.
Right.
Have you heard of Next?
Well, I mean...
Okay, brief sidebar. Very brief.
Got my jumper from there, but...
Thanks. And
you're
that's
welcome.
Clearly not from Next.
TK Maxx, my friend.
Yeah. a chap called Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
Founded a company called Apple.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he got booted out of Apple in like 1984.
I've seen Jobs, I know.
Yeah, all right. Yep. And do you know what he went on to do afterwards?
Pixar?
No, before, well, actually, yeah, before Pixar.
No,
he founded another computer company called Next.
Oh, right, okay. Oh, yeah, yeah,
so,
sure, yeah, yeah.
Tim Berners-Lee built The first version of the web software on a Next computer.
Okay.
That was insanely expensive.
Sure.
To the point where it was like $2,000, which these days I think is $20,000.
Yeah, yeah.
And the only people who could afford them were massive research institutions or universities.
Right, okay.
So definite win for
accessibility. But is that what they were built for?
They were good computers.
So it was essentially meant to be a home computer, but it was just so expensive that research people used.
There was no home computer, really. It was meant to be... Steve Jobs' orgasmic vision of computer perfection, as they've all been since then.
Sure.
Huh. Anyway, by Christmas...
He said reading off his iPad, glancing at his phone on his... timer on his phone on his iPhone.
Yeah. It's not that they're not good, it's just I wish they weren't so fucking expensive and the keyboard worked.
No, fair enough.
So I've got a new MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
That keyboard.
Oh, I really like it.
Yeah. Anyway. By Christmas 1990, TBL had built all the tools necessary for the first version of the web, which included he'd invented the Hypertext Transfer Protocol, HTTP.
Right.
Which was the mechanism by which the client communicated with the server.
Yep.
He had formalized hypertext markup language, HTML.
So is HTTP a command then?
HTTP is a protocol.
So it's like, so when it runs on the... Yeah, sure, sorry, of course. When you see it in the address, HTTP is run this protocol, go to this address.
Effectively. Right. Because the first browser... it was named World Wide Web, that he also wrote.
Right.
It was also an editor for web pages, and it could also access FTP and another couple of ones, like Usenet, I think.
Right.
So the protocols shift.
FTP stands for Fuck Time Players.
File Transfer Protocol.
File Transfer Protocol.
Fuck that pig.
Fuck Time Players.
he wrote the first HTTP server software that was known as CERN HTTPD.
Right.
Because for some reason in the Unix world, we call all of our servers demons.
Sure.
With daemons.
Just because nerds are cool.
Yeah, a little bit. I think it's because they are long-lived.
Well, and demons are famously long-lived.
Well, they live forever. And he invented the first web server, as in the first install of his software.
Right.
Put some information on it.
Right.
And he wrote the first web pages that described how he'd done the whole lot.
Oh, so the first web pages were just a... I mean, it's quite a good way to give a presentation on how clever you are by using the tool that you've built to present it. That's pretty good. Yeah.
I mean, it's a little bit self-indulgent.
That's what I did when I invented PowerPoint.
You made a PowerPoint to tell people about it, and they fell asleep.
Unfortunately, none of them had a PowerPoint installed on their computer.
Well, no, because you only just invented it.
Well, exactly.
Right,
so, it was a real...
weirdly, the early web suffered from the same problem, because at CERN... This project worked. They put the phone book on the new web, so that rather than having to access a mainframe directly to get the information, you could just look up a page and be like, how do I phone TBL?
And then you could...
You don't. He doesn't have a phone.
Is this the... you put the literal phone directory. Sorry, I thought you were... Yeah, no, I'm with you.
So, we now need to wait a bit because it took until January 1991 for the first web servers outside of CERN to be switched on.
Right.
And, hilariously, one of them was in Tim Berners-Lee's other house.
Right, so you could work from home. I get it.
Presumably.
Yeah, sure.
It takes up until, like, August 6th, 1991, where TBL decides that he's onto a winner and posts a quick summary of the project and the work that he's done to date onto the alt-hypertext news group.
Not the alt-hypertext group.
Oh, the alt-hypertext.
They're way worse than the hypertext group.
It was pretty much all alt.
I mean, they're quite new.
He was inviting collaborators to the project.
Right.
One of those collaborators, a chap called Paul Kunz. Careful.
For what?
Kunz.
I bet he does.
Kunz? There's no umlaut, so I'm assuming it's Kunz. Anyway, he's from the Stanford Linear Accelerator Center, or SLAC.
Right.
So Paul Kunz.
Paul Kunz. Oh, there's a joke SLAC in there Kunz. Somewhere. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. He visited CERN in September of 91.
Right.
And was so impressed that he brought the next software back to Slack,
right,
where it was adapted by a person called Louise Addis, a lady called Louise Addis, and they adapted it to run on their IBM mainframe. The computers
so they could talk to each other, but they worked across two different platforms.
Yeah. This was basically the first web server outside of Europe.
Yeah.
And the first one in North America. So kind of done in the space of like 6 months.
So
what
it's
the
not
internet
just
took
the first
20
time
years
that North America has spoken to Europe. It's also just the first time that two web servers have spoken to it. Oh, no.
It's the last bit.
Right, okay.
It's the first web server that is available outside of Europe.
Right, yeah. Because
it all runs over the internet, and the internet is available from wherever. By October 1993, there are over 500 different web servers online.
Oh, wow.
And that's not bad in 2 years.
2 years, yeah.
And it had already started to make the breakout from pure academia. We had early web comics popping up.
Right.
Because, would you believe it, nerds like comics.
Shocking that. Yeah. You mean sending an image file from one place to the other? Yeah.
Dr. Fun, which was still around for ages, and Netboy.
Dr. Fun and Netboy. Yeah. Come on, guys.
You don't get to judge. These are your people.
These aren't my people.
Okay.
They're a fringe element. And these were erotic element. Comics.
Very.
These were erotic.
Dr. Fun. And throughout the rest of the 90s, we basically get a whole bunch of people jumping on the bandwagon.
Right.
So we get news sites, we get informational sites.
And this is news sites so they can talk between branches and stuff? They're not proliferating news to the public through the web?
Well, yeah, because we've also... This coincides with the introduction of the home computer.
Oh, right. So we are talking about BBC, you've got a web page.
Yeah, totally.
Kind of BBC, you've got a server.
Think back.
Yeah.
1991, you'd never heard of the web. 1996, you were probably on it.
Yeah, it's true.
And
I wasn't reading the news, sir, Rob.
No.
I was 13.
No. You were very, very slowly waiting for that to download.
Yeah. Oh, it's a neck. Oh, it's a clavicle. Oh, it's the top of her shoulders. Oh, boy.
It was a simpler time.
Imagine that. I mean...
By the late 90s, anyway, it becomes clear to all companies that basically you've got to have a web presence. You've got to have a .com.
Sure, yeah.
Or you're not a thing.
Yeah. And this is the .com bubble.
In 1999, or by 1999, the web has become so popular that it also aligned with a couple of things. Firstly, a massive drop in interest rates in the US, which led to a surge in VC capital.
Right.
And this caused a boom in web-based
Everybody was inventing
startups.
In loads of stuff online because it was the future.
Was putting it online.
So you've now, seen, I always think that the late 90s, that this whole, like, the dot-com bubble, whatever they want to call it, seemed like it was just about, like, 5 years too soon. It was like, these are all the things we promised we're going to do, but they actually can't until about 5 years later.
A lot of them, to be honest, were... No, in fact, I'm not going to defend these fuckers. A lot of the ideas that came out of the dot-com boom were complete shit.
They were pie-eyed.
They were terrible
shit-talkers.
Ideas.
Sure, yeah.
There were a few that were hardware constrained or conceptually not quite there.
Right.
Most of them were just terrible.
Sure.
That were out for easy money.
They were just like, you just put the word internet on something and people have chucked money at it.
That's it.
Yeah.
And we see the same thing again these days at the moment because we're in the midst of another bubble.
Well, think how many social medias have come and gone or just come out and then get bought up. People seem to make companies just so they get bought by Google or by Facebook and make an arm and a leg.
Weirdly, Google, not so much Facebook, but Google is one of the companies that came out of the dot-com boom.
Sure.
And
were they formed in somebody's garage and it was just two of them and it was like they were like really hard done by and that was really awesome?
Yeah.
You know, the same story as every tech company ever. You never. There's no tech companies where it's like, oh no, we were just super rich,
IBM,
and we went to a really. Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Well, there wasn't so much.
Oracle.
I don't know what Oracle are.
Evil.
Didn't IBM just make all their money off Nazis then?
Well, yeah, but that's a different story to the garage, unless they were Nazi garages.
Well, I suppose it could have been a garage in 1920.
I suppose it's like two Nazis in a garage.
Well, it's not that they were Nazis. It's that they provided the counting machines to the Nazis so that they could keep track of how many people they were gassing and burning.
So, yeah, a few of them survived. And, of course, in 2001, famously, the bubble burst.
True, yeah.
Because that's what happens with bubbles.
Yeah.
And we're left with a handful that carried on for a bit.
Google,
a couple of big ones.
Then.
Amazon. Technically, Amazon was started in 94.
Right. Okay.
But it really went nuts in the late 90s. Yeah, yeah.
I'm kind of hard. It's one of those. All these things feel like they've been there forever. So trying to put a date on when I started using them is hard.
Amazon
actually.
Was originally a bookshop, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And now.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
It was a bookshop.
An online bookshop.
I can't believe the problem with that is though it's going to put all local high street booksellers. Is out of business. Now they're just putting everyone out of business.
Yep. In exactly the same way. eBay was one of the bubble companies that stuck around for a bit.
Yep.
Google, as we've talked about. after 2001,
right.
There's a lot less crappy kind of, I've got an idea, I'm going to put it on the web.
Right.
But the web is, by this point, pretty much everywhere.
Sure.
So before we talked about DNS.
Yes.
And the idea that you need to translate a host name or a server name into an IP address.
Yep.
Let's talk a little bit about URLs. You know what URL stands for?
Universal.
No.
Ultimate. Ultimate. No.
Ultimate Wrestling League.
Ultimate Wrestling League. Okay, no, no, I don't. Clearly, no.
Uniform Resource Locator.
Of course.
You're never going to guess that one.
It's a good place to go and find a blazer and a tie for your child when you go back to school.
Yes, if you need to locate their uniform resources.
Yeah, well, there's a John Lewis down the road. Go there.
Isn't he?
I don't know.
Man, your kid is going to get bullied.
I did. I did, yeah.
Where did Mum and Dad get your uniform then? Waitrose.
Please, George,
I'm wearing a turnip.
George. Anyway, right. URLs, Uniform Resource Locator.
Yes. And they comprise a couple of bits. So fundamentally, we have the domain name that we already know is DNS that tells us where the server is, but also the path to the resource that we want to access.
Right.
So this is after anything after .com / my / first / page .html.
Right, so when I go to avclub.com/film, it takes me to the film page. I just type that in directly because I know what it is.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Because
so the / film bit...
Yeah, is... combine the two and that becomes is you have located that resource.
Ah!
Uniformly.
And it's a uniform logic?
Oh.
I'm trying to help you out here, but...
The uniform element is basically that it's consistent across the web. So
right, yeah, sure.
All web pages and resources, images, etc., are all accessed using the same basic protocol.
Fine.
Now, the idea of having a single point or a single reference to a thing is really, really important.
Yeah.
Especially if you think in terms of knowledge management. The idea that you can go to a library and say, using the duodecimal...
Dewey Decimal System.
You can say that actually this book on gardening is in the gardening section.
On this stack, at this shelf.
Well, it doesn't actually tell you that, but then there are references on the shelves that tell you where it is, so you can find it.
Right.
And this, if we think about an internationally connected network of information being shared by a whole bunch of people, is really important. Also, it means that you can bookmark that really red-hot porn you found last week.
Right.
Because you just know that one is going in the bank.
Don't know what you mean. Don't ever look at my reading list. It's a weird mix of strange recipes and strange... No, I mean, it's just recipes.
Oh, occasionally, the two collide.
It's true.
There's a very distinct Venn.
I'm really into, like, animated celebrity versions of celebrity chefs, fucking.
Yeah.
You haven't lived until you've seen Gordon Ramsay bugger Gary Rhodes. Anyway, let's move on.
But animated.
Animated.
In
it's hentai.
In presumably in the hentai style.
Yeah, of course, yeah. I mean, Gordon Ramsay's got tentacles for arms, but... So, Gary Rhodes, Gordon Ramsay and Tim Berners-Lee suing us then?
We're racking them up at this
point. I feel like this is parody. We've slipped into parody at this point.
I really hope so.
I hope they didn't actually... Is it libel? Which one's the one you say? Libel?
Technically,
he said I had tentacles for arms.
We're currently slandering them.
Right.
When we publish it, it will be libelous.
Best
also,
court case ever, though.
I'm just kind of worried. Is this a case where we can test Rule 34?
I don't know what Rule 34 is, Rob.
Rule 34 was that somebody wrote a series of rules for the internet, or the web, as they should have called them.
Right.
Rule 34 is that if you can think of it, there will be porn of it on the web.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So
I really hope that when we get taken to court and they do the courtroom sketches on the BBC, that he sees the funny side, and when he draws Gordon Ramsay testifying, he gives him with tentacle arms.
No, he's got normal arms. It's just a little tentacle coming up over his shoulder.
Yeah. Have a sense of humour, court.
I just like the idea that we can actually be in court and our lawyer, one of our lawyer's assistants or what have you, has to, at the 11th hour, run down the centre aisle of the court, because apparently they have that, and slam a stack of printouts on it and say, Your Honour, Rule 34, and there is actually porn of this already out there.
I like to think that we're going to prove that Gordon Ramsay is actually Cthulhu. Lovecraftian monster.
Yeah.
Niche. I think we put a button on that. Let's move on.
Modern HTTP right? So the protocol that powers the web, Hypertext Transfer Protocol, is actually currently at version 2.
Sure.
Most people are still using version 1.1.
Really?
Well, and when you consider that when, back in 1990, whatever it was, when TBL actually wrote this, he published version 0.9.
So he didn't, because he was like, this isn't the thing.
We haven't moved this on very far.
So he was like, this isn't the actual thing I wanted to do, but this is the best I can do right now, so it's 0.9.
Well, no, it's the idea that what we have in the world of software is something called like semantic versioning, and the idea that before something is like finished and ready in its first version, you give it a sub version 1 number.
Oh, okay. So it's not a thing he just invented, then it's a thing that's actually done.
Well, no, yeah. But the fact that most people are still using 1.1 tells you that HTTP has not had much love.
No.
Weirdly, it's about to get a shit ton, because version 2 only just came out, and they're already talking about version 3.
Right, okay.
Now, HTTP runs over TCP/IP.
Yes. He said with confidence.
Well, we did a whole bit on this.
Yeah, indeed.
Like a whole episode.
Yeah.
If you would like to, dear listener, feel free to go and refresh yourself. We'll wait.
It'd be better just to edit this music in, wouldn't it? But anyway.
Now, HTTP is based around the concept of making requests for resources.
Right.
Resources, as in URL. Yeah. Right, good.
URL.
You just making sure URL. URL. And the way that this basically works is the client makes a request to the server using one of like four.
Yep.
Okay, nine different verbs depending on what it wants to do.
Okay.
And the most common one that we'll use is a GET request.
Okay.
So we will basically, to load a page, we'll go off to a server and we say, I want to get /recipes/potatoes / gnocchi.
Right.
.html.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
And the server
will
go, I understand what you were asking me for, and I know where it is, so I can give it to you.
Right.
Now, the key thing here is that when I do that get and you do that get, you get the same result. Right?
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it's the same resource. The other verbs that we have available to us over HTTP get a little bit more interesting.
Right.
So let's start with the simple ones.
Right.
So you can also send a delete request.
Right.
Guess what that does?
It deletes.
It deletes the thing, yeah.
Right, okay.
And then we
have... But that's not presumably something that... Yeah, okay, but anyway, go on.
Bear in mind that HTTP was designed as a knowledge management system.
Right.
And therefore, fair enough, most people will be requesting resources, but other people will be charged with editing or creating them.
Sure, okay, yeah, fine.
And deletion is part of that process, right, life cycle.
Yeah.
So this does not mean that you can just send a delete request to Google and it's like Google
That's what I was going to say. It's not like I could go online and be like...
universally respected.
Yeah.
Or in fact, they probably are, but you need to have permission to do it.
Right.
The other two that we've got are more to do with creation and update. So you can send a post request.
Right.
Which creates like a new post.
Right.
And that's creation.
Right, okay.
So
if
I send a post request to a specific URL that didn't previously exist, it, in theory, should start to exist.
Oh, so if you wanted to make /film page, you would send a post request to /film, and that post request would create the /film URL and post whatever you had put into your request.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
And we also have put. Now, put is a little bit complicated because it's also kind of known as patch. And this is the idea that film is there, but you want to change it.
Right. So it's like a modify request.
Exactly.
Right, okay.
It's an edit request.
Put it in there.
Put it in.
Classic TBL.
He's putting in a soft one. No.
He's the digital equivalent of thumbing in a soft one. We've nailed it. We've done it. Or not, as the case
finally,
may be.
Finally. We're nearly out of the alphabet. And we finally made it. The other handful are things like, we also have I know what I'm about to say. I know where it's going. So we have a head method.
I bet you do. A head method?
Yes.
Right. What does the head method do, Rob?
The head method actually retrieves metadata about the resource. So the title, the size, and what have you.
Boring. Okay, yeah, fine. Right.
What
would be the application of that?
Well, let's say, for example, that you have a large document and a slow connection.
Yep.
So the movies page that you want to load is actually like, you know, a megabyte.
Yeah.
But what you actually want to do is confirm that it exists. And find out, is that the thing I want?
So you don't need to load up every picture and video and God knows what else on the site. Oh, you just want to know that it exists.
Pictures different resources on their own resource locators.
Okay, sure.
But it's more, does it exist? Can I get a bit of information about it?
Yeah,
I just want metadata.
Right, yeah, sure.
It's like the Cliff Notes version of the web.
It's a confirmation it exists.
Yes.
Sure, sure.
We also have things like trace, options, connect, and patch, which I'm not going to go into.
No, nor should you.
And we introduce the concept of security. Through a couple of different elements that are built into HTTP.
Mm-hmm.
Authentication and encryption.
Right.
Authentication being quite important if you want to access a resource.
It has to be. So if you want to send a delete request, you have to be authenticated that you can actually send a request, or you're allowed
to. So the server can say, yes, you're allowed to do it. But sure, even if you want to read a resource.
Okay.
And this is something that's built into HTTP at its very core.
Right.
Is in fact, you might have seen it. You don't see it very often.
Sometimes there's like certificates about authentication.
Oh,
and stuff
certificates,
like that.
Encryption, different thing.
Okay.
But have you ever done this thing where you try to get at a website and it pops up, like literally it pops up a little box that just says put in your username and password?
Yes.
Yeah, that's basic HTTP or digest HTTP authentication.
So when, for example, when I work from home and I log into my laptop and I log onto the server through my whatever token, whatever, securely log in, it will sometimes say when I open my email or when I open the internet, what's your username and password? That's HTTP authentication.
No. Because things like... the trouble is that HTTP authentication is quite straightforward.
Right.
And is not used massively because a lot of people have just written like their own login systems, their own login forms,
Facebook and Google
and shit like that. But there is basic authentication built into HTTP, and there is encryption.
Right.
So that what we send back and forth cannot be intercepted.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is HTTP over TLS or SSL.
Right.
And it's known as HTTPS.
Okay, right.
Which is actually...
So that's secure, if you will.
Yeah. We wrap the connection between the web browser and the server
I wonder
like
why it was HTTP and HTTPS. That makes sense.
Cool. I have a note that we need to talk about cookies, but we did a whole bit on cookies.
We did a whole thing about going from page to page.
Over 2 years ago.
And you can... so that's why it updates your shopping basket when you have more than one tab and so on and so forth.
Somebody was paying attention.
I remembered. I guess that we must have done the tech segment first that day.
and HTML.
Do you know why that is? Just right, a brief aside. Right. That's the episode where we recorded for half an hour and forgot to press record, so we had to do that bit twice.
No, it isn't.
Are we sure?
Yeah, because that was in here, and that was also Casablanca, which we recorded at the POW.
Fair. Don't remember that well. Well then, okay, fine, let's move on.
HTML, the markup language, has been under regular and more or less constant development. It's currently up to version 5.
How do you develop a language, though?
By basically adding...
Just adding new commands and stuff.
Adding new tags and new definitions.
Right, okay, sure, okay.
So, for example, HTML 5, it was extended to include native support for video.
Right.
Which was not a thing when TBL did this. Video on the, on the internet, are you crazy?
Yeah, yeah. You're lucky we can send text.
Yeah, we don't even think about it.
That's why there was such proliferation of erotic literature online.
Yeah, because, you know...
Loads up faster than...
It took 50 minutes to download a GIF.
Yeah.
Or you could just read about it and let your imagination do the work.
Do you know what's really erotic?
What?
Imagination. No, blowjobs.
HTML5 also introduced a whole bunch of new semantic elements. So the idea that you could structure data beyond just simply having headings and paragraphs and what have you, the idea that you could make articles and sections and pages, it was kind of a massive update. So that's it, kind of. For the technology behind the web is a bit weird because there's loads of it, but it's all being updated by different people. So, like, there's an HTML working group, there's the HTTP team.
Right.
And
but is there one HTML group? Or are there loads of people all working towards HTML?
There's loads of people working on it, but
is
there is
like
one
an HTML committee or something?
Yes, we have something called the W3C, which is the World Wide Web Commission.
Right.
And these guys are basically tasked with looking after the web.
Right.
And they
so you could be lots of different working groups working on HTML code, but they would have to go to W3C to say, this is what we want to do to push it forward to HTML6 or whatever.
Yeah, why not? the trouble is, it's the web. So It's pretty much anything goes.
It's open source. It's by definition. It's what it is, isn't it?
You know, we had this massive thing, certainly in like the early noughties, when the people who were defining how the web worked, especially how HTML worked, were the people who made the web browsers.
Yeah.
And this was the whole browser war thing, right? Yeah. Because they were like, well, we make the client that renders this.
So if TBL... If
we want to put a tag in that does blinking text, we can just do it. What are you going to do? Anyway, you had a question.
I was going to say, has TBL worked for my... making the worst mistake ever, trying to pick up my beer again. Has TBL worked for Microsoft or Apple or something like that?
No.
Did he have any input into Internet Explorer or Safari or whatever?
Not directly.
Right.
But he has had consulting input, I believe, into the W3C.
Right, sure.
Who are the standards body that actually are meant to make these things work.
Right.
But it's one of those things. You build this thing, it's fine. You know, you knock it out over Christmas. Mm. You crack it out over Christmas.
Sure.
And the next thing you know, it's everywhere. Everyone's using it. Everyone's got an opinion. Yeah. And now you need an international standards body to actually make it work.
But is it an international standards body that's just set up off its own back? It's not regulated by governments or anything.
No, that's
the point. No regulatory.
It's an international standards body. So W3EC, like the IETF, the engineering guys who did WIFI and all the rest of it.
What I'm saying is there's no oversight by anybody of authority, in inverted commas, which is why Zuckerberg can go and sit in the Senate and get shouted at, but there's actually fuck all they can do because it's the internet, so suck a dick.
Is an interesting point, and let's come back to it after these messages.
The message being, I gotta pee, man.
So it's probably worth thinking about, I mean, it's almost, in a weird way, we are now in the position where we have the web.
Yep.
So being without it is...
There's no going back.
It's almost incomprehensible, right?
Yeah, it is too much of a part of society that you couldn't take it away again, could you? I mean,
let's think about some of the things that make it important.
Okay.
And these were key facets that were built in. One of them being the concept of decentralization.
Right.
That anybody can run a web server.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal.
Yeah. Well, the decentralization of information, the availability of information, like just simple things like fucking Wikipedia and IMDb and shit like that, like these are things that would cost people money. Like you would have to have at least some kind of resource to go to.
Oh, absolutely.
Whereas now, like, you know, you remember everyone,
the Encyclopedia Britannica hates Wikipedia.
Exactly what I was about to say. Yeah, exactly that. I mean, who doesn't want all those volumes on their shelf? But then next year it's out of date. Whereas Wikipedia, but any bugger can go in and write whatever they like.
It's also it's more than that. It's the concept that the Encyclopedia Britannica can decide that they're going to define, say, a wombat as not a marsupial.
So it's multiple sources of information.
Yeah, it's choice, I guess.
Yeah.
And
I think you get a better understanding of things because you can look at a number of... Not that anybody does this because everybody lives in an echo chamber, but you can get multiple... I know, don't give me that look. I know I live in an echo chamber.
No, this is where we're kind of getting to.
Yeah.
Is that at the heart of the web was the idea that anybody could put up their own interpretational resources around their own given reality, whether that was scientific data, whether that was
interpretation of art,
this, that, or the other, or the art themselves.
Mm.
You know, they could publish. It was a free and truly, I'm not even going to say democratic, because there's no democracy here, just a truly free and open platform.
Well, it's like anarchy in the Noam Chomsky sense of the word anarchy, isn't it? It is.
Yeah. Anarchy in the www.
Yep.
And the other thing that's slightly less obvious, I suppose, is the concept of linking data together means that you start to build up this series of relationships, this web of almost semantic relation between data.
Sure.
And this is, it's really, really hard to define, but it's also really critical and integral to what the web is.
Yeah.
But the idea that on a given site, you expect everything to be fairly well related, but also that you can just link to a related piece of information on a completely different system.
Yeah.
So IMDb might reference, they don't, by the way, because as we'll come on to in a second, this entire system has completely broken down. But IMDb might link to the fact that there were parts of a film that were made in Berlin.
Right.
And then they can link to a resource, a reference that tells you everything about Berlin, the history
of
it.
Sure, yeah, of course.
And that then jumps off again to a different site that tells you about the founders of Berlin.
But more and more they do it just within their own site, don't they? So Wikipedia, I mean, unless you use the footnotes and the see also bits at the bottom, the external link section.
Which I would encourage everybody to do.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Which is actually far more, is probably one of the more useful things that Wikipedia does as opposed to opening 40 tabs within Wikipedia. But that's more and more that, isn't it? Everything's in blue because everything is linked to another page in Wikipedia.
And there's this concept that we'll... In fact, let's come back to it because I think it's time, before we get a little bit paranoid, this time it's me.
Oh, God.
But let's talk about the amazing fact.
Right.
The amazing fact for the web. Well, the web is fundamentally kind of amazing.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing. It's like to the point where I don't think about it too hard because... You'll have like your brain will melt out your ears.
A little bit. Yeah. So let's put some context around why it's amazing. And the easiest way to think about this is if we assume that the web is this platform for free distribution of information of any kind.
Yep.
Whatever, literally whatever does it for you, big guy. Or little guy.
Yeah.
Or little guys.
Not leave them out. It includes everyone.
Big horses.
It's inclusive. Big horses. Shire horses on there. Yeah, terrible Twitter pages.
Donkeys.
Break a lot of screens, Shire horses.
Whole episode of how you make a mule.
How you make... Is it just a donkey fucking a horse?
No, it's a horse fucking a donkey.
Right. So what's a donkey fucking a horse?
Something else. It has a different name. Shit, I knew this.
Does it really?
Yes. It's literally a different thing. how many websites do you think are created every minute? We've been recording this for what? This is going to be about an hour.
Sure.
So, 60 minutes. How many websites do you think have come into being?
It's going to be way more. 10,000.
Okay, slow. Call your jets there, dude. 10,000 websites an hour.
I don't know.
No. 9 to 10-ish a minute.
Right. Okay, 9 to a minute?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's
God, and none of them are good.
571.
And they all use Squarespace. Not a sponsor.
Or GeoCities.
Not a sponsor.
We are not sponsored by Squarespace. We are not sponsored by Casper Mattresses.
Yep.
And we are definitely not sponsored by, well, anybody.
Really. LegalZoom.
If you're interested in sponsoring We're Drunk and We Know Things, then please reach out to our sponsorship team. Johnny Come Lately at WeDrunkAndWeKnowThings.com.
No, but seriously, he is producer of DrunkAndWeKnowThings.com, so, you know, free, send us stuff.
Yeah.
I'm talking to you, beer companies.
So 9 to 10 websites per minute means 570 per hour.
Right.
Which means every single day, 15,000 websites
now
are created.
Is that pages on sites?
No.
Or is that actual legit sites?
Sites.
Fucking hell.
15,000 per day.
How many cat blogs can there be?
Every year.
570.
The web is creating, at the moment, over 5 million new sites, new resources.
Right. Okay. That's... Okay, so if there's 5 million... Right. I'm just trying to think in terms of how many people there are using the web, which is, what, half the population now?
Give or take. Yeah.
Right. That's too much.
How many interests do you have? How much information do you have that is... And opinions on that information that are unique to you? And you are one person amongst... You know, three around this table amongst...
Yeah.
What, a dozen in this bar?
Yeah, no, that's not wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The web
is... That's mental.
You have the right to share whatever you want to do. And unfortunately, that means that we need 5 million new sites.
Yeah.
Unfortunately...
A lot of that is shit or racist.
Total crap.
Or just straight up, just... Oh, dear, yeah.
Just wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's next for the web?
Probably someone's going to have to step in and massively, heavily regulate it and probably take all the fun out of it.
Before we get there, let's think about the positives. So the web started as a text-based medium.
Yeah.
Images were added fairly quickly out of necessity.
Yeah.
Because there are some things that... Picture is worth 1,000 words.
It is if it's of a... Nothing.
But no, like scientific diagrams and what have you. So images have been around for a while. Yeah. Now we're seeing that video on the web is
supported
a
first by HTML5.
Yes, and the fact that they added it is really key
because
they recognise not only is people doing video on the web, but it's like people are doing video on the web.
I must admit though, I do get a little bit annoyed sometimes when you log on to a website because I'm my dad apparently. When you do go to a site and it's just videos, and you're like, no, I don't want to. Listen to your weird reporter tell me about the new Iron Man film.
In fact, can I come back to why that is?
Yes.
Right. So, other stuff that we talked about, video and audio.
Yeah.
Hello, podcast listeners.
Yeah.
We're on the web.
Netflix,
all of this stuff.
That thing, that old Napster.
All of that is happening. And the next generations of media distribution are going to be web-driven.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I mean, we've had this discussion before about the future of film, but films are going to be delivered probably over the web to cinemas at some point.
I think they already are being so in the US, certainly. Yeah. They're being, Because why? Because it... Specifically with film, like, sending all the canisters of film, having them all made and sending them around America is a significant part of post-production budget of films, whereas if you can just email it to them...
Pretty much.
...and it's in 4K, yeah.
So the idea that we're going
to... get someone to remotely focus the
We're
going to
extend the web
well.
To... fundamentally, the web is so entrenched in media distribution knowledge.
Yeah. Well, we had this conversation earlier. When was the last time we used cash? Every time we're in here, we pay on online banking using Apple Pay. Yeah. You know, it's everything.
So
it's everything.
Everything. Money, video, audio, virtual reality, augmented reality. Yeah. It's all going to be web-based. Mm. The other big thing is data, because the web is very good at taking structured knowledge and presenting it in a form that we can immediately consume.
Sure.
So you can watch a video or you can read an article. Mm. The idea that you can actually just get access to raw information that you can then code around or load into Excel or whatever. Don't use Excel. But you can load into like a Python framework and you can play with it and you can do stuff with it and you can make it do stuff for you. So that stuff could be... we're not talking about like computer science academia. We're talking about if you want footfall on your local high street, you will get that information from the web and you will load that into your till system, your rotoring system for your little shop that sells comic books, toys, and dildos.
Right. So you've been to my store, comic book toys and dildos by Mike.com. Got a lot of trouble for the signage, actually, on the front of the place. It's just a massive dildo.
Nobody likes to see comic books.
get these nerds off the high street.
Let's cycle back to the problem, because the problem that we have with the web is that we've introduced the concept of silos, and increasingly those silos are either through complex necessity, the likes of Google, because we've got 5 million new websites year on year. Somebody's got to help us find the shit we're looking for. But also, as you referenced earlier, the non-constructive silos, the ones that want to own your web-based experience and what have you. And this is Facebook, Twitter, all the big social networks. Wikipedia, they get a pass.
Okay.
And they get a pass because they reference external sources, which is kind of
If you can show your work in and you've got all your footnotes and all that kind of stuff, then absolutely. If you can show your sources, that's great. It's not just conjecture, like... Facebook, for example, which is
Facebook's entire thing is we want everything to be part of our platform.
Yeah.
And they go to the point where you can import a video from YouTube and they will pull it in from YouTube.
Yeah, yeah.
And they will load it onto their YouTube, by the way, also completely closed.
Yeah.
You know, you can get data out of it, kind of, by sharing a link to the YouTube video.
Yeah.
And the trouble is that the subtleties in how the data on the web is made free... actually result in an awful lot of people being able to massively abuse that freedom.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah,
so
sure,
the idea that I can link to something somewhere, that's fine. Mm. But the idea that I can only link to that resource there and can't replicate it on my own system
or
take a copy. And of course, we've also got things like copyright and what have you.
Like how you can't save your own photos back off Instagram.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Motherfuckers.
It's fucking weird.
Also, you can, but it takes a lot of work.
All right, okay.
If anybody's interested, check out my personal blog, robdudley.com, which contains every photo I've posted to Instagram ever.
I might have a look just to find out how to do that.
I mean, don't. It's literally
a lot of dick
cat photos. I mean, actual cat photos.
It's so weird how they take down so many nipple pics, but they've never taken down your Instagram feed.
What they don't know.
That's why TBL's not allowed one.
No. And of course, Tim Berners-Lee has recently been on a bit of a rant. This is the whole
Magna Carta thing, that was in the news the other day.
To be fair, he originally announced, I think, 10 years ago in the TED Talk.
Yeah.
But he has a project that he's been working on called Solid.
Okay.
Which is based entirely around freedom of access to your data.
Right, okay. Yeah. Yeah, like things like your Instagram and all your Facebook and... Well, isn't that GDPR?
A little bit. But he kind of predated it a touch. And this is going to be the next big battleground for the web, I think, is who owns what? Who can charge for what?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
we've had this traditional model of the web is supported by advertising. And
there's a certain amount of things with like Facebook and stuff. It's like, it's free, so we'll do whatever we like because it's free. You want to use it? Don't use it. If you don't like what we do, then don't use it.
Just to be clear, I don't use it.
Which is indeed. And a lot of people, and I think there is a trend. I don't think it'll ever die out or anything. I think Facebook is here to stay. But I do think they're going to have to change something about their operating model facing the way things are going about control of data and that kind of stuff, because people aren't putting up with it anymore because people are more clued up about it.
Well, increasingly we've got digital natives who are like, you know, well, actually, no, this is a big deal.
Yeah.
But also, and this is a conversation that I've gotten into a couple of times over the past like 6 to 12 months.
Yeah.
I think we're coming to a bit of a... We're coming to a shift in how we approach the fact that in the early days of the web, it was all happy-go-lucky, free information, publish whatever the fuck you want.
Sure.
And now we're starting to realize that actually when you have that system and it's as prolific as it is, there need to be controls around accuracy, representation of truth.
It's like the Industrial Revolution, right? We built a shitload of machines and they were tearing arms off people and killing people, and it was like we hammered into this new machine age before we realized that actually things were getting a little bit unregulated, a bit out of control, and people were suffering for it, and people were worse off for it, as much as they improved our lives, and they introduced regulation and tampered things down a bit.
Yeah.
Which is, the more I talk about how I think, oh, we should have a bit of regulation, it makes me nervous even more, because at the same time, I don't want the government all up in my business, but Facebook are a bunch of cunts, and somebody needs to sort them out.
Well, fortunately, we've got TBL flying the flag.
Nice. Him and Al Gore.
Yeah.
That's a South Park episode in there somewhere. How has TBL not been on South Park?
I think because he has a really good legal team.
Oh, right.
Which God, we should...
We better fucking hope not. Nothing but respect for the man.
So that's the web, in a nutshell. I mean, we skipped a whole ton of stuff. We haven't really talked about the impact of e-commerce.
This is also not a 17-hour podcast.
Because it turns out that when you start scratching away at something like the web, it's weirdly the internet... If you draw the line under the web, is so much easier to define.
And that's the point as well of all this people getting more and more aware of how the data is being used, is that people are scratching away a little bit and then going, wait, they're tracking me through what phone calls I use? Why is Facebook doing that? You know, it's... Yeah.
I think in a weird way, the worst thing that ever happened to the web was the introduction of e-commerce and money. But it was inevitable.
It is inevitable. To quote the Emperor... from Star Wars. This has been the tech segment of We're Drunk and We Know Things. We've recorded again in JB's smokehouse. Our producer, Johnny Con Lately, was eventually Johnny Got Here, and we have been drinking everything they've got. Next month, we've got something very, very special.
Oh, next month is so special.
Very, very special.
You'll already know this because you listened to the film segment first, but next month we are doing a live Christmas recording.
It's true. It's true. So look forward to a lot of visual jokes that you will not understand.
Yes. Also, if you're in Jersey around about the 28th of November.
It is the 28th of November, yep.
28th of this month.
Mm-hmm.
Then feel free to pop by Pizza Project on the street by the side of the market that might be called Market Street.
I believe it's called Market Street.
And stop in. We're there. That's a Wednesday evening.
Starts from 6.
We will be recording 2 episodes back-to-back live.
A couple of games, a couple of laughs,
and
a lot of beers.
Two very, very, very we're never doing this again presenters at the end of it.
We have bitten off more than we can chew. I love you. Spider-Man. No.
He's taking it the other way. He's taking the fight to them, which is that we want to own our data and sell it back.
And I say to you on this...
How loud was that?
It was pretty loud. We're drinking 5.5% beer as well, which is going to...
And?
Thin the blood.
Thin the blood and soften the humours.
Somebody got some... Welcome to the tech segment of We're Drunk and We Know Things. We are in JB's smokehouse, drinking rustling something by Verdant. It's bloody nice, whatever it is. This week, we are doing... I'm going to start again. God. Not enough or too much beer. Right, sorry.
You all right for beer?
Probably a good idea, sorry, yeah.